Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal health and well-being and everything that's going on in our whole environment. We talk about the health, personal health, the health of our communities, the health of food, water, air, and earth, the health of our society, and the health, the ecological stability of and pollution of planet Earth, our habitat. And each week on the show, we talk to different experts, authors, advocates, scientists, filmmakers, and a host of people that each kind of have mastered one important facet of all that really impacts on our health. As regular listeners know, I'm a longstanding journalist of health, food, and the environment. And those things we're now coming to understand are more and more interconnected than, you know, we ever really considered for many years. But there has been one scientific school of thought, which is functional or integrative medicine, that really has been ahead of the curve on this understanding about this interconnection. And I'm really delighted to have with us today on today's show someone who has been a tremendous pioneer in that way of scientific thinking and healthcare practice. My guest today is Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, ND, that's naturopathic doctor. He is one of the world's leading authorities on science-based natural integrative medicine. In addition to his own pioneering research practice and connecting the dots on the connection between our health and our environment, he also has taught many generations of other practitioners and set up models of education and practice. As a co-founder and president of Bastyr University, this country's first and largest fully accredited university of natural medicine. That's a really big thing. So everything that you kind of know about or hear about or practice in terms of natural medicine, if you're someone who follows that, really stems from several generations of tremendous work to put the scientific foundation underneath traditional forms of healing that have been around for centuries. And Dr. Pizzorno really has been one of the top people in doing that. He has recently published a book, which is very germane to our interests on Connect the Dots, and it's called The Toxin Solution: How Hidden Poisons in the Air, Water, Food, and Products We Use Are Destroying Our Health and What We Can Do to Fix It. Previously, Dr. Pizzorno co-authored the Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, which is a huge seller. Over 2 million copies of that, as well as the textbook of natural medicine. So I'm really fortunate and delighted to have him on our program today because he's both not only an ace practitioner, but a pioneer of natural health practice, as well as a teacher of it. So it's a real treat. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Dr. Pizzorno.
Well, thank you for the very kind introduction.
You know, as someone who also has been in the health field as a communicator for several decades myself, and yet who also reports on the different things that undermine our health through, you know, the healthy food we seek to have, the healthy air and water we need, and all that's going on in our world, I've kind of been occupying that whole terrain. I've kind of seen a disconnect between our hopes of what we can achieve for our health and then the, you know, the poisoning and pollution and all the things that are going on. So this has been a very rare book and a very rare opportunity to really do, you know, connect the dots in this regard, and so that's what we'll be talking about today. And, you know, one of the things I guess I'd like to begin with is, you know, there's, on the one hand, there's a, this has just been to me one of the tremendous ironies of being, from my perspective, both a, you know, a champion and promoter and enthusiastic follower of integrative healthcare, as well as an environmental reporter. Because on the one hand, we hear a lot of accusations, integrative health care, it's not science-based, only, you know, conventional medicine has the real science, and, you know, that you're really a champion of science. And yet, on the other hand, when it comes to the science of what these multiple chemical exposures from industrial toxins through fracking or through the use of consumer products or pesticides in food agriculture, you know, no one's really done a lot of that science to kind of connect the dots about what all of the impact of that is on people. And so, you know, on the one hand, we have this cry, you know, we're science-based, and the accusation that the integrative doctors are somehow not, even though it really has been integrative medicine that has led the charge in understanding the role of industrial toxins and other poisons in our environment. I'd love to hear your insights into, you know, this kind of, I guess I would call it a hypocrisy about really doing the science and where you stand on that.
Well, I think that's a very, very good point. One of the ways that conventional medicine managed to discredit non-conventional medicine was by saying we're not scientific. And I find just ironic that so many of the principles that were kept alive in the society for over 100 years, despite huge opposition, these ideas kept alive by naturopathic doctors are now being shown to be totally scientifically valid. I mean, it's quite remarkable. When I was in school back in the early 70s, some of my teachers were actually thrown into jail, you know, taken on handcuffs in front of their patients because they had the temerity to tell their patients, well, eat real food rather than processed food. Here, take these vitamins to help promote your health rather than depending on drugs. And equally important, you got to keep the toxins out of your body because they basically poison everything. So good health comes down to good nutrition and toxin elimination. So these are critical issues. And, you know, I look at healthcare reform and, you know, whether you have Democrats in control of it or Republicans in control of it, to me, it doesn't really matter. What really matters is what is the healthcare that we are paying for? And as long as healthcare doesn't get to the foundations of why people are really sick, we're going to continue to have this huge healthcare crisis.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, we're trying to fix it, you know, after the fact, when there's already a problem, there's already a crisis, rather than fixing it through assuring, for example, and this is something I cover quite regularly on the show, and in my reporting, a healthy food supply. You know, if everyone had access to healthy foods and they were affordable at certain prices and they were grown in the proper manner, you know, we'd just be miles and miles ahead, I would guess. I don't know if the science on research on this has ever been done. Perhaps you would know about that. But, you know, it seems like we would save tons of money because people would be healthier. Like, what kind of food supply do we have right now in terms of toxicity and all of that?
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been involved in medicine for about half a century. And over that period of time, I noticed quite a change in why people are sick. Now, it used to be back in the mid-70s that people were sick primarily because of nutritional deficiencies or, you know, poor lifestyle or getting overweight, lack of exercise, et cetera. But then something really significant started to change about 50 years ago. And that is we started letting toxins into the environment. And when I mean toxins, I'm talking about metals, and I'm also talking about chemicals. You know, the herbicides and the pesticides and the PCBs and the DDT and all those things. And so what happens is, because they're in the environment, they get into our food supply. So even a person who's like trying to eat healthy, you know, eating lots of fruits and vegetables and things like this, because we're told to eat fruits and vegetables. Well, the problem is, if those fruits and vegetables are conventionally grown, they have a lot of toxins come along with them. It can be glyphosate, it can be organophosphate pesticides, organochlorine pesticides, etc. And so what happens is we're getting these foods that are grown with modern agricultural procedures, which makes them bigger but less nutrient dense and have toxins in them. And these toxins basically poison the physiological functions of the body. The example I discussed most in the book, as you'll recall, is diabetes. And the reason for that is when I was in naturopathic medical school over 40 years ago, diabetes affected less than 1% of the population. But now it's 20 times more common. Well, what happened? And people might say, well, everybody's getting obese. And that's true. People are getting obese, and obese people have more diabetes. However, if you look at an obese person in the bottom 10% of chemical exposure, they have no increased risk for diabetes. So yes, obesity causes problems. There's something else much bigger going on. And what that much bigger going on is the chemicals in the foods now poison the insulin receptor sites on the cells, so the cells can't get sugar they need in order to function properly. So because the cells are now resistant to insulin, we call it insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome, now the pancreas has to overproduce insulin to get the sugar into the cells. Well, that's fine. You know, our bodies have remarkable capability. But you do this for 20 or 30 years, and you burn out your pancreas, and it can't produce insulin anymore, then all of a sudden, suddenly you would say, oh, now you have diabetes. Well, you don't just suddenly get diabetes. You got to work at it for a while. And that's what we've done. We basically have induced diabetes in our whole population.
So what you're saying is if somebody were in an extremely clean environment eating healthy food, they ate too much of it, they became overweight. If they're the amount of toxins in their body, you know, was low, then even being slightly overweight would not be the predisposing factor the way having more toxins is. Now, I think that's pretty radical. I don't say it's, you know, I mean, I've never, in other words, there's a lot of yelling around about, for example, sugar consumption, which I think is entirely justified, high fructose corn syrup and other kinds of factors. But the role of toxins in all of this is something that isn't heard. Now, let me just for a second, when we're talking about toxins, you know, to go back to the question I asked you at the beginning of the show, you know, here you have a lot of people going, we want to see the science. But meanwhile, we're being exposed to all of these different kinds of chemicals that you described and others. And is the science being done to see what the impact is going to be on people before they're being used in agriculture, they're being used in industry where they, you know, enter the water supply or the air supply, they're in consumer products? I mean, is the science being done to say what is the health impact of this going to be on people, on even animals, you know, that are exposed to this? I mean, with all the calls for science, is there enough of that science?
Well, great question. So what's happening is that there is research done on these before they put into the marketplace, for sure. But look at the research. So the research, what they typically do is they look at a single toxin. They look at a single toxin for a relatively short period of time. They find parameters. Say, okay, well, as long as it's not too high, well, it's not going to be bad for people, and then we'll just say it's okay to use it in the food supply. The problem is we're not just being exposed to one toxin for a few months. We're being exposed to hundreds of toxins for our whole life. So what might be in isolation not too bad in conjunction with everything else is a huge problem. And that's one reason why the researchers just didn't pick it up early enough. It wasn't until researchers have commented on this, you know, for years. If you look at the Rachel Carson Silent Spring, you know, there's been some calls for concern, but the right kind of research was not being done. Then starting about 10 years ago, a really enterprising researcher in Korea, whom I'd love to meet someday, named Becky Lee, she started looking at the effects of total body load of toxins. And we started looking at the effects of total body load of toxins. Now, all of a sudden, all the disease research starts popping up. And now a lot of researchers have validated what she's done and found it in other areas. So I'm giving lectures on toxins, and I literally do this all over the world, mainly to healthcare professionals. I say to them that when you think about toxins, you have to look at two things. First, I have to look at the total body load of toxins. Because the problem with the toxins is that they're must say, synergistic in their damage in the body. So 1 plus 1 does not equal 2. 1 plus 1 equals 3. Then 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 10. If he has more, he keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So you have to full body load. In addition, then you have to look at the specific toxic effects of each of the toxins. So, for example, you know, a lot of people, one of the common reasons why people go to see doctors is because they're tired. Or they're depressed. Well, how about looking at their PCB exposure? You might say, well, why PCBs? PCBs were banned 40 years ago. Well, here's the problem. Yes, PCBs were banned 40 years ago, but the PCBs are what are in a class of toxins called persistent organic pollutants. Now, what that means is that these chemicals were designed to have specific physical or physiological effects. So, for example, they had physiological effects to poison insects' neurological system, or they had physical effects to make our foods our pens non-stick, or to spray on the clothing so children don't get burned. So they have a specific purpose, but they were also designed to be difficult to break down. So that means once they get into the environment, once they get into our bodies, they're very, very difficult to break down. So look at PCBs, banned 40 years ago. But the problem is PCBs are in people's bodies, and they do things like poison the production of thyroid hormones. So you can have a thyroid trying to produce hormones, but the PCBs decrease the hormone production so that people will be tired because they don't have thyroid hormone. So that's an example of a specific effect from a toxin. That one might be the organophosphate pesticides. So the organophosphate pesticides, they work well as pesticides. Matter of fact, if you eat conventional grown kale, you'll get plenty of organophosphate pesticides because it's one of the best pesticides for kale. Well, unfortunately, when you start looking at it more deeply, what you realize is that organophosphate pesticides are neurotoxins. So then if you start looking at children born to women who in the top 10% of organophosphate pesticide body load, compare them to children born to women who have the bottom 10% or least amount of these organophosphate pesticides, the kids born to the moms with all those chemical toxins have an IQ drop of 7 points. Three studies have now shown this. Yeah, well, it's just terrible. So three studies have shown this, and once they follow these kids for 7 years, they haven't got the IQ back. Not only are they dumber, let's be blunt about it, they also have doubling of ADHD. I can go through toxin by toxin by toxin and show you how these diseases, which are so much more common now than ever before, they're good to toxins.
Wow, that's really incredible. You know, I think, Dr. Joe, that the average person, you know, who's not, and that would not be necessarily true of my audience because I think they are pretty savvy about it, but I think the average person is kind of like, you know, easy come, easy go. I take it in, it must be gone the next day or something. The idea that some, what you've just described, that some persist and that there is something called what you just said, the you know, a total body load. In other words, throughout the tissues of your body, throughout the cells of your body, in the organs of your body, in your bloodstream, in the circulation of your body, you know, there are different amounts and different places of these various chemicals, and they are kind of dragging down your health. Now, you know, that brings us to another question, which is, you know, one of the things that I cover a lot in almost all my reporting, almost everything that I cover, you know, was at one time considered controversial or was considered controversial by somebody. And then very often I'll watch the, you know, the notion that, you know, fracking poisons the water supply. Oh, no, it's perfect, you know. Or integrative medicine really, you know, helps proactively prevent illness and disease. And you know, no, you know, we just deal with it later. But whatever it is, you know, you kind of watch the thing where, you know, people are not yet ready to accept an idea. I know you've seen this over your whole career. And then at a certain point in time, it begins, you know, more and more people come to realize that it gains traction. And one of the controversial areas that, you know, people are running around on the internet and ready to, you know, take up arms when they hear the notion of detox. You know, the idea that the systems of the body, that there is a detoxification, you know, there are detoxification systems in the body, and that we could help them along in any way is regarded as a kind of wishful fantasy, a kook idea. I mean, there are many people who don't regard it as such and are, you know, get the point and are interested in finding ways to do it. But for some people, it's almost like, you know, there's disbelief that any help or support to the body's detoxification is either possible or a good idea. Can you address that? I mean, I'm sure you've heard it, you know, for years, as well as seen the results of doing it, you know.
Right. Well, so first of all, I want to validate the concept that, yes, our bodies have remarkable detoxification capability. And if you look at our liver, there are over 50 enzymes in our liver whose sole purpose is to break down the toxins we're exposed to in the environment. So that's one reason why when you look at some of these toxins and you look at the half-life of the body, it's measured in just a few days. So our bodies are good at doing it. But remember, as I said earlier, some of these toxins were designed to be difficult to break down. And PCBs being a great example of that. The half-life in the body of PCBs, you know, how much time it takes for a body to get rid of half of it, is between 3 and 25 years. Okay.
Oh my.
So these chemicals, and DDT, the half-life is 10 years. So the problem is, once they're in, hard to get out because they were designed to get out. So yes, our bodies have great detox systems. Unfortunately, we've been exposed to chemicals that were designed to bypass, to avoid the detox system. And that's why it's such a big problem. You know, don't get me wrong. Don't get too discouraged. Say, well, okay, you know, what can we do now? We can't get rid of the toxins. Well, we can get rid of the toxins. And that 3 to 25 year half-life with PCBs, well, it turns out there are ways of getting those PCBs out, but you got to be smart about it. Now, one way to get them out is both good news and bad news. So it turns out that women who breastfeed, we know, have less breast cancer. And one reason why that could be is because one of the major causes of breast cancer is PCBs. Again, even though they've been banned, they're in the environment. And so, for example, the more fish a woman eats, the more PCBs she's going to have. So a group of researchers, this is out in Norway, I believe it was, they basically looked at the amount of time that women breastfed and found that women who breastfed for at least a year, and didn't matter the number of children, but as long as they breastfed for a year, they then looked at their PCB levels, and PCB levels went down by 40%. So one reason why women get less breast cancer is because when they're nursing, they're getting rid of PCBs. But the bad news is, where are those PCBs going? They're going to the babies. And it turns out PCBs are one of the reasons why babies have ADHD.
Wow. My goodness. Wow. You know, that's incredible. I mean, one of the things, too, is I think one of the things that comes up around this kind of, you know, you could a mother could have some PCBs that's downloaded into the child. There could be other things that are coming in from the air or water or, you know, the region, foods and all of that. And so this makes up, you know, the whole body load. There could even be medications that, you know, insensitive individuals could trigger a reaction. So the notion that either we're all fine or that, you know, every single thing is, you know, kind of fine for everybody, or, you know, the whole population could do well with this, is just also simply not true, because our levels of toxic exposure are all different, and most of us don't know what they are, you know, because that's not regularly tested. And then, you know, our capacity to detoxify could be either stronger or weaker, depending upon the, you know, the load we carry, and as well as other factors. I mean, you know, how do we begin to understand that, you know, that complexity around what we need to do, or, you know, what the risk factors are?
So another very good point. So when you look at the liver's enzyme function for getting rid of toxins, well, it turns out this huge genetic variation. As a matter of fact, there's a 1,000-fold variation in specific enzymes in terms of how well they work. A great example of that is the enzyme that breaks down caffeine. So that, and it's got enzymes called cyclin P450-1A2. So we'll just 1A2.
And what does that break down again, Dr. Joe? I didn't hear that clearly.
Oh, breaks down caffeine.
Oh, okay.
Caffeine. Okay, so in some people, you know, drink coffee, after any time, a cup of coffee any time afternoon, and they're going to have trouble sleeping at night. That's a person like myself. And some people then drink a cup of coffee with dinner and sleep just like a baby. That's like my wife, okay? Because we have huge variation in our ability to break down caffeine. So that means that those kinds of toxins that are broken down by that enzyme that breaks down caffeine, well, if you're exposed to toxins that are supposed to go to that pathway and your pathway works well, then that toxin is not going to cause you much trouble. But then people like me, I got to be really careful about things like perfumes and things like this, which are broken down by that enzyme, because they will make me sick because I can't get rid of them. So it turns out there's huge, huge variation in how well these enzymes work. Now, it's also another reason why diet can have such a big effect on health. For example, we know that women who eat more cabbage family foods have less breast cancer. Well, why is that? Well, it turns out that cabbage family foods facilitates the enzymes that are most effective at breaking down estrogens so that they don't become carcinogenic in the body. So you can go through toxin after toxin and many, many foods, and it turns out that that balance between how well a person's enzymes are working, what foods eating, what toxins are being exposed to, actually can have a big predictive effect on what diseases a person's likely to get.
Well, one thing I can say is that, you know, as much as I really, you know, work hard and devote a certain portion of my time to trying to get better understanding and less exposure to toxins, you know, and make people aware of them and, you know, get better regulations in government so that we're all less exposed as a kind of preventive measure, really. I also do the healthy stuff, too, and I can say that after really working on this book, I have certainly been eating a lot more cabbage and sauerkraut and
great,
all kinds of things. You know, listeners, I highly recommend that you get Dr. Pizzorno's book if you're interested in this topic and the preventative things that you can do. It's called The Toxin Solution. But here's a quick takeaway. Eat more cabbage. you know, how, you know, what is going on in people's bodies from, you know, taking this barrage of different toxins and having, you know, our different organs trying to kind of go through and detoxify them. And, you know, we're all kind of hoping and assuming that everything's working well, but if it isn't working well, or if our genetics aren't that great, and, you know, what you mentioned about, you know, the how well we process caffeine or how sensitive we may be to the perfumed lady with us in the elevator or the man with a heavy cologne, whatever, you know, is a clue about our capacities and, you know, and maybe, you know, a signal that we should eat healthier and take better care in this regard. But you know, and I'm also in the no caffeine after, you know, no coffee after whatever, and don't like the perfume in the elevator very much. But, you know, what is actually going on in our bodies? I mean, without drilling down too deep, but just to get a sense of the fact that, you know, our bodies may be working overtime to try to get rid of this load. And, you know, how do people recognize that this is going on for them, where they may just think, oh, I'm tired, or, you know, my digestion is off today? I mean, what might be some of the things that people might experience that would alert them to the fact that they need, you know, they would benefit maybe from getting the toxin solution and doing more healthy, you know, things to support the detox systems?
So you covered a lot of territory there. Let me start by saying, by just a personal story. Mm-hmm. So I have the great privilege of having known my great-grandfather. So I'm from a relatively long-lived family. So I knew my great-grandfather, you know, grandfather, et cetera. My great-grandfather died at age 95. At age 95, my great-grandfather had no apparent disease, never saw a doctor in his life. He ate the standard, the healthy Mediterranean type diet, grew a lot of his own food, lived independently, outlived his wife by 5 years, and his brain was functioning extremely well. I used to play strategy card games with him, Italian card games with him, and this old guy would beat me all the time. I was a precocious 10-year-old. I was so surprised because I'd beat all my friends in strategy games, and this guy would beat me all the time. So then I looked at my grandfather, and I looked at my father, and as it went from the healthy, low-toxin, high-nutrient Italian, Mediterranean-type lifestyle to the low-nutrient, high-sugar, high-toxin American lifestyle, the health deteriorated. So if the great-grandfather had no disease problems whatsoever and lived age 95 and lived independently, you know, he wasn't in a nursing home, he didn't have dementia. My father, whom I loved dearly, by age 65 couldn't drive safely at night. By age 85, had dementia and died at age 88 with osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, hip replacement surgery, heart surgery. I can just go down the list. I can say to conventional medicine, well, thanks for keeping my dad alive, but conventional medicine, why didn't you deal with the reason why people are sick? Because my dad was basically poisoned. His body stopped working way, way early. I just had a conversation with one brother and six sisters. I just talked to my brother and said, you know, my dad would still be alive today if he had been living healthily like my great-grandfather. And this is not critique of my dad. You know, my dad was a very responsible human being. He raised eight children, my mom, and worked hard his whole life and did well for his family. And he just followed what everybody's been told, and that is eat your regular diet, and if anything goes wrong, go see a doctor. That doctor will give you a chemical, and what that chemical will do in the vast majority of situations is simply turn off the symptoms of your body not working properly. It rarely fixes anything. So that may sound harsh, but I'm just kind of, my dad's birthday has come up short. I'm just acutely missing him. I don't feel my best right now.
Yeah. I think what you just described is extremely common experience, not only of a lot of people, but it's probably a universal experience of everyone who starts asking young in life, and this would be me too, is this necessary? Is this the way to go? Is there no other way to, kind of stay healthy rather than winding up, having all kinds of illness and all kinds of problems? You know, I have interviewed and worked with so many people in the health field over my time, working in communications for it, and like you, like me, everyone has a story like this, and one went out in search of answers. I think there are many, many more people now who also are kind of perking up to this and wondering, what can I do, and getting better informed about these things, and that's the kind of natural progress. And at the same time, it's really an irony to me that, our country is more and more cavalier about putting out these kinds of toxic pollutions that are going to, make it a harder battle for people. But it's also a good thing that we become more aware of it. And when, in following, something like there's an 8-week program for detoxification that you offer in the toxin solution, and then people can, really do the work of cleaning up their health, and also realize how precious that is and what it takes, and kind of go out and I'll say this so you don't have to, because no one's coming to me for health advice and has to trust my apolitical nature in any regard, but and then go out and protect our health in the greater society and not allow some of these practices that are so incredibly harmful, not just write a blank check and say, well, I hope it'll all be okay, but really make health a priority on an individual level, on a community level, and also on a national level, so that, we realize this is a great treasure that we have here. Can you talk a little bit for our listeners about the 8-week program, what they'll encounter in following it that you offer in the Toxin Solution?
Yes. So, I think the idea of detoxification is extremely important. I really want to caution people about the simple jumping into the detoxification program. And the reason for that is that we are so loaded with toxins that our organs of detoxification are totally overloaded. So what most detoxification programs tend to do is they tend to, stir things up. But if there's no way for us to get rid of these toxins, it's quite problematic. So what we've done in the book is go through a series of 2-week processes. So the first week we say, okay, here's where the toxins are coming from. Stop letting them into your body. So we say spend 2 weeks to really become conscious of where the toxins are coming from and how to avoid them. There's not much point in going on a detoxification program if you're still stuck in toxins into your body. So do that for 2 weeks. And then we spend 4 weeks working on the organs of elimination. So our gut plays a huge role in detoxification, but it can also play a huge role in toxification. So you've got to clean up your gut, get the right kind of bacteria in your gut, get the right kind of fiber and things like that into your gut, get the gut working properly. Then we work on the liver, spend 2 weeks working on the liver, because our poor livers have to get rid of all these toxins, but they have the old-time concept a naturopath called a congested liver, where things aren't functioning as well as they should because the liver's been overloaded, it doesn't have the nutrients it needs to get the toxins out. We need to get the liver functioning properly. And then the next 2 weeks, we work with the kidneys. Now, 20 years ago, I didn't worry about detoxifying people's kidneys because, that wasn't as big a problem. But now you're seeing these kidney dialysis centers showing up all over the place because now we're getting kidney failure. We just didn't used to see that. Now we see it all the time. So we have to get the kidney prepared. Now,
what is kidney failure? Like, what is the relationship between toxins and kidney failure? Because you're right. I know a lot of people. What?
Oh, yeah. It's huge. Yes, because just like the liver is responsible for detoxifying, the kidneys play a huge role. For example, when we're exposed to cadmium, people who smoke have a lot of cadmium, but people who eat conventionally grown soybeans, which is the majority of the population, they like cadmium as well because the soybeans are grown with high phosphate fertilizers, and those high phosphate fertilizers are contained with cadmium. So our wonderful livers know how incredibly poisonous cadmium is. So typically, within a day of our being exposed to cadmium, the kidneys clear the cadmium out of the blood. Unfortunately, once it gets into the kidneys can't get rid of it. The half-life of cadmium in the kidneys is 16 years.
So
16 years, we've got this highly oxidative metal in the kidneys, causing oxidation in the kidneys, damaging the mitochondria, and basically making the kidneys break down so it can't function anymore.
But people would be eating soy products. I mean, some people eat like tofu or something like that. Writing about food and health as long as I have, there was a time many years ago when, I was saying, yay, hooray, do that, and then the time came where I was like, no, don't, take it back. Sorry, we were wrong about that, which is, it's always good to learn from science and say what the newest science says, rather than just going along with it. But I think a lot of people are also exposed to soy that aren't, thinking they're going out and eating healthy tofu, but they're eating chips or they're eating products that contain, soy oil or other kinds of things. Is it also would they be exposed to what you're describing too, from like the oil, the soy oil, that's in everything?
Yeah.
I mean,
I would not expect it in soy oil. But I can't say I've looked at it either, but I would not expect to be in soy oil. But nonetheless, you're exactly right, and that is, people tend to eat soy because they think, I'm going to eat nice, healthy food, realizing that what was supposed to be healthy food has been contaminated. Mm-hmm. And it's not only in food. For example, people use acetaminophen, okay? And it's all over the place. It's in Tylenol. It's in many of the analgesics used for various purposes. It's mixed with with pain control drugs and things of this nature. Well, it turns out cinnamon is extremely hard on the kidneys, and some researchers suggest that the use of the so-called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs plus acetaminophen is also one of the primary drivers of damage to the kidneys.
Wow.
Okay,
that's really important because they're just those two things, and then you're doing them regularly, kind of habitually, and then it leads to a downline problem, and everyone's like, it's available over the counter, it's a food, it must be fine. Yeah, and it isn't. Mm-hmm. So go on with what you were saying. Sorry to have interrupted you for this detour, but I just think it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So anyway, so as you know, we go through this eight-week process, the first make people aware of where the toxins are coming from, stop them coming in, and then prepare the organs of elimination. And we go through a 1 week or as long as you want process of then really getting the toxins out. Now the body's ready. So we do a combination of mild caloric restriction, mild alkalinization of the body, the use of long saunas, increase in fiber. There's much of these little, I've been doing this for a long time. I know what works for people. And the reality is that we can get rid of most of these toxins if you just know how to do it properly. But you got to prepare your body.
Well, how do you envision people doing this. Like, you know, they get the toxin solution, they follow the 8-week program, and that kind of brings them back to an earlier baseline that really stops the damage, you know, that kind of undoes some of the damage and kind of helps revive the organs and the detox systems to function better going forward. And then as they go forward, of course, they're going to be exposed to more toxins. I mean, they'll work harder to avoid them because of the fact that, you know, they realized what it took, you know, to kind of clean it all up and release some of that. But at the same time, there are certain toxins that, you know, if you're in a city and, you know, inhaling particulate matter, if the water supply of your region is tainted, you know, there are certain things that we can't make a choice to avoid through, you know, personal lifestyle choice. Would you recommend or consider that people should kind of be doing this on a seasonal basis, on an annual basis? I mean, how often would you want people to be kind of going back and doing a program again, for example, or you know, or following it up with their ongoing lifestyle? How, you know, given that we're in a world where, unfortunately, a lot of this stuff is you know, going out and about on us?
Yes. So, you know, again, another great question. So number one, of course, is we have to avoid the avoidable toxins as much as possible so we can leave our body capacity to deal with the toxins we can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. So the last chapter in the book is simply how to live a toxin limited, like toxin-free life, so avoid the toxins as much as possible. But then you're right, you got to periodically detoxify. The frequency with which a person has to detoxify is dependent upon how well they've gotten the toxins out of the body, and then also how much toxin exposure they're getting into the toxins they can't avoid. So I'll give you an example. As you may recall in the book, we have a lot of patient examples. And as a matter of fact, I actually wrote up, I just counted it this morning, I wrote up 35 case sisters. I think we only used like a dozen of them. So one of the case sisters is a woman who was 67 years old, was diagnosed with dementia, thought she was losing her mind. She was very scared. She had high mercury levels. And so once I determined she had high mercury levels, I put her on a mercury elimination program. It took me a year and a half to get the mercury out of her body. But once I got the mercury out of her body, all her dementia symptoms were gone. It was really quite remarkable. So I think for the average person, frankly, at least once a year, I recommend people do it on the birthday. That's kind of a birthday present to themselves, is being healthier for the next year. But realistically, in the world we live in, you probably should do, you know, as long as you're keeping your organs elimination functioning properly, you should probably do like 1 week every 3 months to keep those toxins out. As a matter of fact, now that the book is out and my wife has read it, we are ourselves going on the detoxification program. I just recommend it to everybody.
Oh, that's really funny. That's cool. You know, you're mentioning you know, about the mercury and everything. I mean, that's a tough one, and that's a, you know, but the thing I wonder is, you know, in terms of what the diet is that you recommend and also what people eat, because, you know, there's about a million different kinds of diets and people recommend different things. And, you know, so some people will, for example, recommend fish. And we know that fish, and of course, fish is not the only source of mercury. And there is mercury in fish because it's not just that, you know, mercury-dense fish were born producing mercury or something. It's because of the, again, the industry that releases mercury into the air, it goes into the water, the larger fish consume the smaller fish, and they wind up with more mercury. So it's not like, you know, it's a God-given thing that every tuna that ever swam the ocean should be loaded with mercury. This is, again, the result of our industrial processes. But, you know, what should people do? Because on the one hand, fish used to be just, you know, considered one of the healthiest forms of protein, really, and you know, now, I mean, so what do you recommend in that regard?
Another great question. So I agree fish is very healthy. As a matter of fact, if you look at the research done on the Mediterranean-type diet, one of the lectures at the conference I was just lecturing at over this past weekend was looking at the research that was done and showed that a lot of it was actually inaccurate because they had actually underestimated dramatically the amount of fish being consumed by people eating the Mediterranean-type diet. So it turns out fish is very good. But for the fish to be very good, he needs to have the following characteristics. Number one, he has to be wild caught because we have farm fish. The farm fish has all these chemicals in it we're trying to avoid. He's got to be wild caught. Second is it needs to be small. The reason why it needs to be small is because as fish gets bigger, it collects more mercury. Because while small fish have relatively small amounts of mercury, when bigger fish eat them, because mercury is so hard to get rid of, they're concentrating more of that mercury. And then the final factor with the fish is pick those fish which are primarily cold water because they have higher omega-3 fatty acid ratios in them. And the standard American diet is way too low in omega-3 fatty acids.
So what fish does that leave us with? I'm thinking of anchovies at this point.
anchovies, sardines, small mackerel, not the big mackerel, the very small mackerel. Small wild-caught salmon is really, really healthy food. So there are plenty of fish. And happily, the USDA puts out, the USDA puts out lists of which foods have the, which of the fish have the lowest levels of mercury. So those are the ones to eat.
Well, I'm one who fortunately likes anchovies. A lot of people don't, but actually I think they're terrific. But you wouldn't sit down and eat like a plate of them or anything. You know, it's more something that you would maybe put in a salad or eat on a cracker or something like that. But I, you know, I like them. I'm glad that they made the cut. So, you know, give since we're talking food, could you give our listeners a sense of the kinds of foods that, you know, you consider really healthy, that they'll be, that are also powerhouse for detox, that they'll be enjoying and following the food programs, you know, the food programs that accompany the different chapters as people proceed through the 8-week program to detox in the toxin solution, what foods will, you know, will be highlighted on that program?
Right. So we focus on the foods that are colorful and high in fiber. So a great example that would be blueberries, for example. Not the big, you know, almost apricot-sized blueberries you get from the commercial farms, but the small blueberries, ones that are really blue, not quite as sweet, and have lots of fiber. It's a good example. Eating foods like, cabbage. All the cabbage family food, as long as they're organically grown, the cabbage family food is high in fiber, high in vitamin C. It's also high in what are called glycosinolates that stimulate the liver to help detoxify more effectively. Color is really important. Beets are another great example. You know, beets are high in a number of nutrients, one of which are things like betaine and such that help the liver detoxify. They're also high in nitrates that also help dilate the blood vessels, and they have a lot of benefits for people. One of the things I recommend people do is if they're relatively limited in their genetic variability, what I mean by that is, you know, I'm almost 100% Italian. Okay, so I can go back and look at, well, what were my forebears eating? So what did my great-grandfather eat? What did he bring with him from Italy? I recommend people have Hispanic descent, for example. You know, look to your forebears a little long time. Look at what they eat. And what you'll find almost all the time is they eat real food. They typically grow the food themselves. And they had other things that helped make it work. For example, they had a lot of olive oil. Or they might have had their fruit trees, or they may have had their walks in the wild, where they knew that there was these foods growing in the wild, and they could pick those foods, and they know they're helpful for their bodies. They knew that eating the dandelions and dandelion leaves were really healthy for them, because the dandelions weren't being sprayed by herbicides, and the dandelions have lots of nutrients in them that help our body function more effectively. So it's almost like a detective work. You have to kind of start looking and seeing, well, my healthy forebears, what did they eat? What worked for them? Because most likely our physiology is optimized for those foods.
That's very interesting. Well, I mean, I guess the bagel and the and cream cheese and lox. I don't know how we're doing that because it's one part gluten, one part dairy, and one part fish. But, yeah. I mean, you know, and then
doesn't
the chicken soup.
Well.
Yeah, from, you know, I mean, although I have to say there was a dish that was a sorrel soup that my grandmother, who came from the old country, used to prepare. And also there was beet soup, there was cabbage soup, there was stuffed cabbage. I mean, those were all. And actually, the sorrel soup, which is has a Russian name, it's called schav, and it's they would take the sorrel and, you know, kind of mash it up and make it into a soup. And actually, I love sorrel. It's not that easily found, but it's kind of got a lemony flavor in a green leaf, and it's, you know, it's quite delicious. I always make a point of, you know, eating it if I run across it, and it usually comes around in the upcoming spring. So, you know, some of these foods, it's like,
I guess,
go ahead.
Are you Greek,
mm-hmm.
are you of Greek descent?
No, Jewish.
Are you of Greek descent, right?
No. Mm-mm. No, I'm Jewish.
Okay.
I'm basically Lithuanian Jewish. I'm Northern Jewish, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the reason I bring that up is because a researcher who is presenting to us over the weekend was from Greece, and mm-hmm. it turned out the sorrel was a significant source of food for people, and it's very high in omega-3 fatty acids. A very healthy food.
No kidding. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess the cabbage, I mean, they were eating a lot of cabbage. I mean, definitely a lot of cabbage. So the bagel and lox, maybe that was more of a special treat that probably in this country became a symbol of affluence, you know, like if you're having a family gathering and you serve that, then, you know, whatever. But it's actually, you know, knowing that the bread and all of that wasn't that healthy, I would slice the bagel instead of in half, two pieces, I would slice it into four or five very skinny toast-like pieces. And
oh,
sort of
smart.
Crisp them up and, you know, to reduce the amount of starch that you're, you know, and flour that you're getting. That was one of my, you know, long ago techniques when I used to eat that more often. But,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's fascinating to learn about the sorrel. Of course, any greens at all that come from, I mean, beet tops is another great green. That's a wonderful green.
Yeah.
One of the sweetest leafy greens that there is. You know, it's nice. Actually, this is a great book for, you know, it just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it's really a great book for the springtime diet, because I always, you know, it's really great to eat with the seasonal cycle of what grows, and there's a lot that that naturally will be growing and more coming up more abundant, you know, from now onward through the early spring, that really is actually part of the diet that you recommend in the toxin solution. So this is actually a great time to get re-inspired, and maybe spring cleaning can also mean cleaning ourselves up, cleaning up our act, you know, and cleaning up the body. Yeah. And enjoying a lot of these wonderful greens because they're going to be so abundant, you know, very soon. So let me just say the name of the book again. We have about another 5 minutes of the show here. The Toxin Solution, How Hidden Poisons in the Air, Water, Food, and Products We Use Are Destroying Our Health and What We Can Do to Fix It. You know, I just want to mention something else. This book is published by Harper One, but I'm also aware that you have developed some kind of auxiliary services and ways to really look into for people who are kind of on the maven end of the spectrum, or for people maybe who have more intensive health challenges and want to get a little bit deeper into detoxification according to the integrative functional medicine view that, you know, that you offer, that you also have testing services, do you not, and other things that people can even do a deeper dive into their own personal healing through following the book and then availing themselves of those? Can you tell our listeners a little about that?
Yes. So if you go to thetoxsolution.com, you'll find that there are a bunch of resources I've made available for people to help them understand how to become healthier. And so what I've done is put together some questionnaires people can do to help assess their toxic load, If they already have a disease, they can see which toxins most likely causing that disease, as well as symptoms. If they want some guidance for what lab tests to run, determine the toxic load, have recommendations there. They want to know where they can find, health safety, safe health and beauty aids, or how to determine which foods are most toxic and which are least toxic. We have all those kinds of resources there. It's an ongoing process. There's just such a challenge that we've set up for ourselves with all these toxins we're exposing everybody to. I try to make it available as much as I could that would help people get this all figured out. It's important. Everybody has to work together now to get these toxins out of our environment because they're poisoning everybody. And not just us as humans, they're also poisoning the animals too.
Forget about these various parties that we've had. You know, there needs to be people of all backgrounds and previous affiliations need to kind of maybe drop that and come together for the sake of our health. You know, I mean, that's really the party I'd like to belong to.
What we're doing right now is not working. And that was one of my biggest complaints about the Affordable Care Act and one of my concerns about what the Republicans are doing now. And that is, it's not who is controlling health care. It's not who's paying for health care. It's the health care we're paying for is what counts. And as long as you don't address the real reasons why people are sick, which is nutrient deficiencies and environmental toxins, doesn't matter what the healthcare system is, it's going to fail. If you look at diabetes, look at this epidemic of diabetes we have. Diabetes is the most expensive disease. As people get older with diabetes and they start developing the sequelae where they start, losing their vision and losing their sense in their hands and their feet and losing their kidneys and such, it's incredibly expensive to take care of them. So I don't care how good your drugs are. I don't care how good your surgery is. The body's broken down. They're not going to do any good.
Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of, we're throwing money down trying to do triage, basically. And, sometimes triage is necessary if it's the life of oneself or one's loved one. Naturally, you don't want to just shrug your shoulders and give up. But, we'll never stop those runaway costs. We'll never really get people to a healthier state when we go on and on, allowing all these poisons because somebody, makes a better bottom line because of them at the overall bottom line for everybody, which is our health and the health of our planet, is, undermined. And so that's kind of just I think this is one of the cases where, we just need to break through to what really matters and think about it differently to get more people coming together really to protect what matters. I mean, that's my take on it anyway.
Deal with the reason why people are sick. Get the toxins out of the environment. Get nutrients into foods. Treat people rather than generic diseases. Deal with the social determinants of health. There's all these various factors that have a huge impact on health that we can do something about. So let's stop arguing. Let's actually fix the problem.
We need to understand the bottom line that we're really dealing with. If we're dealing with protecting certain industries, whether it's the, conventional medical system, whether it's the gas and oil industry, whether it's the conventional agriculture that's poisoning the food, we're protecting that bottom line. But then the health bottom line we're neglecting, it's time for us to take a stand. It's our health, So thank you so much for being with us today and for your leadership in all these different ways. Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, thank you for joining me and our audience here on Connect the Dots, and thank you for everything you're doing. I think this show and the book and the testing and all of that you're doing really has opened a lot of doors for people and thank you so much. It's been just a pleasure talking to you again and having you here on the show.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for the invitation. I look forward to our next project together.
Me too. All right. And thank you, listeners, for being with us for another edition of Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well, chin up, and keep moving forward.
And it was day and it was night. And it was dark and it was light. There was pink, but there was the sky.